Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, your morning show host, one of three now, and I am so happy this morning to be joined by Nancy Hastings. And Nancy is the owner, proprietor, main worker, I think, at All Seasons Garden and Floral on your way to Ponderay. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Are you actually in Ponderay or are you in Sandpoint?
Well, actually, we are almost the dividing line there at McGee Road starts Kootenay, the village of Kootenay.
Okay.
So we are technically, yes, in the village of Kootenay.
But okay.
Yes, Sandpoint mailing address and
over so. In that zone for mm-hmm. sure. I drive by your place all the time. Nancy, you and your husband John have been in this community forever, and I just want to applaud you for all the great community services you have done. I know you've been involved with our school gardens. That's how we came to know each other. And mm-hmm. I think you're in POAC, your POAC helper outer. And John has his hands and fingers in a lot of great helping places too. So just appreciate you guys being here, and you're great supporters of KRFY too. So we thank you for that.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. So I'd like to start, Nancy, by having you tell our listeners a little bit about how you came to be living in Sandpoint and how you got involved in the basically the garden and nursery business.
Well, like many others, we both actually grew up and were married in Minnesota, and we had ended up meeting when we were in Montana. And so after we got married, we decided, well, we'd really maybe like to get back to the mountains. And just serendipity brought us out on Amtrak one winter, and we got to experience a little bit of the life of Schweitzer and skiing and things that we were interested in then. Also, and then we decided to come out on our own again in a summertime during the festival, and it kind of sealed the deal. And so John was a teacher back in Minnesota. So he got a job in, I guess it was 96, with the Lake Ponderay School District. And so that was the sort of the impetus for getting
yes.
out here.
What allowed you to get here? Mm-hmm. And once again, listeners, we've got another ex-Minnesotan like me. Yay! We're so glad you're out here. But it is a great change. And Idaho, I mean, the Idaho Panhandle, once you get here, it's pretty tough to leave it. So we're very happy to have you. Well, we know that John was a teacher, but what were you doing? How did you end up with All Seasons?
Well, I grew up in agriculture. I grew up with a dairy farm in Minnesota. And so we had a very large family and a very large garden. And it was always, you know, I knew how to drive a tractor 6 years before I drove a car. And so that was kind of my life. And so even though I think I was trying to run away from it, and I packed up my little Chevy Chevette the day after graduation, and left that little hometown, that little farm. But it all sort of catches up to you as you grow up and realize that's not a bad lifestyle. And
right.
So
it's yeah. can be a very satisfying life working with plants and helping mm-hmm. people with gardens and landscaping and all that kind of thing. So my experience with All Seasons has been through the school gardens, and then also buying plant materials myself through you. And I've always found everyone, well, mostly everyone, and you especially, to be very knowledgeable and helpful with questions about plants, about our microclimates here in the Panhandle and Sandpoint, and just offering good suggestions and nice quality plants and, you know, great offerings for this climate. And so I'd like to jump in and start talking about that. You know so darn much, and you sell plants, of course, but you also help people design their gardens. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'd like to begin by just having you talk a little bit about opportunities and challenges here in Sandpoint. What's great about it? What's challenging about it?
Yes, it's shifted quite a bit, actually. I opened the business acquired the land in 96, and then opened the business in February of 97. And so it's almost 30 years now. And even then, coming from Minnesota and growing in Minnesota was much different than here. And that was very excited because they were mostly a solid zone 4, which means you have to have a hardiness rating of a -30 to get through the winter. And so being in Sandpoint then was zone 5, minus 20, which was really nice. A lot more varieties to choose from, to get to enjoy all year round.
I was so excited about that too, coming from Minnesota. It just seemed like there were three times as many plants that could make it through a Sandpoint winter.
Yes. Yeah. Learning more about all those kind of plants. And of course, there's all kinds of breeding and genetic engineering being done on plants to make them prettier or bloom longer. And so that opens up a whole nother aspect of living here. And so it's great. And then the last 5-6 years, we've actually been firmly moved, I guess you say, by the U.S. Department of Agriculture into Zone 6.
Wow.
Yeah.
Zone 6 makes, I feel like that's maybe the state of Missouri or somewhere.
Yeah.
It's really interesting that we're this far north and can be a Zone 6.
Yes. Wow. It seems to be mostly, I imagine it's because we're on the west side of the Rockies, and then we do have the lake effect. I mean, we always refer to Hope as the banana belt of our Bonner County, if you will.
And is that really true? Is it even milder there than other places?
It is, especially for those, you know, tender crops or tender things, things that like it dry. They get the last of the frost. They have a lot of rock and sun reflection.
Yeah, those lucky slopes. Dogs. Yeah. They're probably zone 7 then, I suppose.
Well,
we don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that those are all great opportunities living in Sandpoint. Lots of variety of plants and a little longer growing season here than other places we might be considering living. But there are also some challenges. Let's talk about a few of them.
Yeah, the first thing I noticed was the soil, or what many people were calling their soil, and moving and renting a place and then moving into our place and just the land around all seasons too. Just there's such a diverse, there's clay and Kootenai, there's sand and Sagal and rock and Hope. It's just a mixture. Everybody has their own problems, if you will. And even the topsoil that people were selling bulk was very rocky. And I came from the Midwest where we had just this incredible
organic,
natural
soil. Yes.
Yeah. And didn't have to pick a rock out of anywhere. And so it's just that challenge of really working with the soil and getting that down. And then also just the cold nights. You know, it was so easy to grow tomatoes.
In the Midwest. Yes.
And then suddenly it's like, wow, those colder nights, just even 50 degrees can make a huge difference on the whole watermelons, tomatoes, peppers, things like that. So it was adjusting a lot of those
kind of
things, that
practices,
right,
to try and adjust for all those cool nights. I have to tell you a short story. The first summer that I moved from Minnesota, and my house was in Sagal and a little bit of a frosty hole, I think. I was so sure that there would be no frost after May 15th. I mean, I was coming from Minnesota. I thought there's no way it's going to frost. I had everything set out, everything, you know, planted, great big garden. June, in like the second week in June, there was a light frost, and it mm-hmm. did in a bunch of my plants. I really learned a lesson there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. That was one of our first years here, and our daughter's, one of her first words when she was about a year and a half was snow, because it was 4th of July. Grandma had come to visit for the 4th of July, and we were going to the parade, and we ended up hanging out in Connie's because the snow was coming down.
It was crazy. Yes, it's crazy. Less of that these days.
Yes.
We're warmer than we were when you moved here. But yeah, cold nights and cold times can happen. That's a big challenge. Before we started talking live, you mentioned another challenge, which is wildlife. And we'll say more about that. Or maybe we'll just say a lot about it right now. But wildlife are both they're a wonderful opportunity, and they're also a challenge.
Yes. It's, you know, everybody moves here because we have this gorgeous scenery and lots of wildlife and open air. But yeah, they do come and go as they please. And so that's been, you know, especially if people want to do a food forest in their landscape, get a nice, whether it be a vegetable garden or a lovely orchard or just a lovely rose garden, whatever it is your favorite, your dream is, it can happen, but it usually requires a bit of, it doesn't boxing yourself in. It's just protecting your investments because, and then just, and you can share it. You know, the bunnies will still come in and things like that. And there's ways to do it in a not so, in a more lovely manner.
It doesn't just have to be a huge, tall privacy fence or something like that. There are ways to keep the wildlife out. But fencing is one option, right? It is a way to do things.
Yes. Yeah. And it's amazing to me. I was like, you know, what people would come and say that in the middle of this, even in Sandpoint, you're having problems. They have problems with things getting eaten, you know, arborvitaes and things. And it's the neighborhood moose. And
which is so crazy.
Yeah.
And but so it is.
People don't really believe that when they move here. They're like, really? You have moose running around in town?
Yeah. I mean, so I suppose a partial solution could be to fence your most sensitive, the things you care about the most, and then let the rest be a little more landscape proof, a little more wildlife landscaping proof is what I mean to say.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are, there's different regions and there's different plants that just are easier or not as tasty to them as other things are. So, and then just through our experience, we've found the ones that are just pretty much bulletproof. And then there's those medium level deer resistant ones. So it's, there's a lot to choose from, but it's, yeah.
Kind of a matter of how attached you are to the way your plants are going to look every summer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think so. Well, we've got two topics to touch on. One is food forests. That's such an interesting topic around here. And I'd also like to talk about native plantings, and they can be part of a food forest too. But let's start with a person. If you're a person who wants to incorporate food plants into their, like just their yard and their landscape, mm-hmm. what kinds of things do you talk about with them?
Well, we've really found that like cherry trees, I mean, we put one in our yard and just sort of let it go. We don't have a very large yard, but and it is fenced so that the deer can kind of nibble around the backside to the one side. And we just let it get big, not, you know, more orchard pruning type for high production because it was just in a great spot for shade.
Yes, beautiful.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's like the crows get the top of the harvest and we can get to the bottom of the harvest. And that's all good. We're all fine with that. And it's just nice. It's a beautiful tree and it shades us and it gives us some cherries. You know, raspberries can keep out the side that you don't want to look at. And I think blueberries are actually probably one of the underutilized, beautiful landscape shrubs. They just have just a sturdy shrub. And it's sturdy, beautiful, glossy leaves that turn bright reds and oranges in the fall. And then you get this amazing harvest. So, yeah, there was a very charming older woman in Ponder Point who had her three sides of her house were basically all rimmed in blueberries. And it was great.
Well, who doesn't love a good blueberry? And they're pretty easy to grow and maintain. And they, as you say, they have so mm-hmm. many beautiful qualities. I think that's a great food forest selection. What about people who want to kind of figure out if they can have veggies in with their whatever plantings and perennials? We see that more and more. Mm-hmm. And is that something that you have, that you're able to help people with?
Sure. Yeah. And there's a whole movement, if you will, of complementary plantings. And you know, marigolds with your basil so that you get a little bit of a bug protection and that they all like sun and things like that. So there is a lot of ways to integrate the two and make it both beautiful and yet functional. And you can tuck your, on a sunny garden, you can have your beautiful flowers up in the front and then tuck your garlic or your onions in the back and they'll just look like Dracaena popping up.
Right. And those garlic scapes are, well, I don't know if they're pretty or not, but they're trying to be a bloom, I guess. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because I see more and more of that in town around Sandpoint, and I think it's really quite lovely. Tomatoes in with the, you know, as you're saying, tomatoes in among the flowers and, you know, just every kind, squash kind of running out onto people's lawns and just all kinds of interesting garden items mixed in with the rest of the yard, which is so fun.
Yeah.
Less grass, more veggies, maybe. And then nuts, too. What about nut trees? Are there any great ones for this area?
Yeah, we are. We're real blessed to have a lot of good selections in hazelnuts. Many times people call them hazelnuts. Filberts are basically the same species. And so they come in both shrub form. So you could have them as a privacy screen, if you like, or they come in a tree form. So yeah, there's that kind of a choice. And then walnuts, black walnuts, are really sought after by many people. They are slow growers, and most people, the patience level, I always try to temper their enthusiasm, because there is an alternative, the Carpathian walnuts, which are the English walnuts. They're easier to crack. You're going to get higher productivity quicker.
And they make it here. They make it. How
Carpathian
nice.
Carpathian walnuts, the English walnuts, they...
Nice.
Yeah, and they're a faster growing tree.
Okay.
Tree form.
Well, that's a great food forest idea. And that can turn into a nice big shade tree. And then you've got some nuts to go with your cherries.
Yeah. Yeah. And we even have... we periodically... We'll carry and we're able to bring in the Hall's Hardy almonds, and those are beautiful flowers. They look like almost like a flowering cherry tree, like the pink flowering cherries.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
And do they make a true almond? That
they're small, very small almond, okay. But the same type of taste.
Oh, yeah. Fun! That would be a fun little tree to have in your own personal garden. How cool! All right, so there's lots of food choices. We won't get into the whole garden, you know, every possible vegetable plant you might incorporate into your yard. Folks, you can think about that, where you're going to put your green beans versus your Swiss chard or whatever. But there are a lot of beautiful, really beautiful edible plants that could be tucked in here and there, and I think it's a fun idea. Well, Nancy, what if a person wanted to really go native plants? And is that something that you've helped folks with? And is it very doable? Can people acquire what they need?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. There's quite a few growers and suppliers of native plant species. And a lot of the local architects, landscape architects and designers will use them sometimes exclusively if the people want just exclusively native plants, or they'll just incorporate them into their appropriate spots. Probably the most beautiful and well used, the ones that are most sought after are the columbines, the lupins, the knick-knick is just a bulletproof, deer proof. And that's the great thing about that. We talked a little bit about deer and moose and things like that is the deer tend to stay away from those native plants too. So it's kind of a win-win easy decision to
which
to
makes
do that.
Me wonder, what do those darn deer find to eat when if they just lived in nature and it was all native plants? There must be some things, but they do tend to
the grasses and the berries from some of the native plants and
there
things like
go.
That. And but yeah, they, you know, if they get hungry, they'll eat anything, of course. There's no,
but it's like little cookies or something. All of our special plants that are so tender, they're more favorable if deer can grab them.
Yeah,
Yeah, interesting. So that this then leads to, again, the question of landscaping for wildlife. And I would say that in my experience, most people don't want to encourage deer in the yards, but they're wanting birds sometimes or other animals. And there are definitely landscaping plants that will attract birds if you're not caring about what they're eating on your shrubs, that kind of thing. What are some of the ideas for those kind of plants?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, starting from the top canopy, there's always the crabapple trees, and then there's the European mountain ash are a beautiful, you know, three colors. They got the flowers in the spring, and then the beautiful berries, and the fall foliage is excellent now.
Yeah, and we don't care about those berries, so that's a great choice.
Yeah, they're a little harder.
Give the birds.
They're not as tasty, and there's even those ones that we have for. That we can use for ourselves. Aronia they're starting to make all kinds of different types of aronias, whether they be ground hugging or shrubs. And they have just a lot of beauty in them, and almost like a burning bush, but has really deep black berries. And they are
pretty, and those berries are black and bitter too.
Yeah, but they're supposed to be incredibly... they are very high in antioxidants. If you were to pulverize them and juice them,
it's
like with the elderberries. And the elderberries, you know, make a great hedge. If you want a privacy screen, you can whack them down.
And the advantage is, they don't need as much babying as so many other plants. Those guys, once they get established, I know every plant needs some help at some point, but those natives can really dig in and hang on.
Yeah, that is especially when we're looking at this summer. You know, they're so much more drought resistant. And so once you get them started, and that's really the key, and it's to helping people get their landscape established. Is you gotta have to be patient, more patient than you probably want to be, and also have to make that commitment, especially for the first year, to get them protected from the deer. Even if they're a native plant, you might have to do some things, especially if they're a younger sapling of European mountain ash or something like that.
Sure.
Just to get them through the winter, they don't get stepped on by moose or what have you. Then they can come back
they
next
need
year.
Need a little chance there.
Right.
Yeah, that's great advice, because it is easy to get impatient and expect plants to just go for it, and they do need to get established.
Mm-hmm. And then the water. If you want to create a hedge or a barrier, or, you know, whether it be dust or just a privacy screen, you just have to commit to that first, especially that first summer of getting them some good, consistent water at least twice a week to get it well rooted. And then next year, you'll probably be able to ease back a lot unless, of course, we have a real dry
drought.
August like now.
Yes, it's a dry one, that's for sure. Well, Nancy, here we are. It's mid-August. Unbelievable. Here, another year coming and going. And that means we're moving into fall, and thoughts about what happens in the landscape in the fall and what gardeners might want to be thinking about. What are you talking with your customers about this time of year?
Well, it's the color change season. I always like it. I look forward to September and the cooler days and the cooler nights, and then just watching the landscape just sort of go into their second season, really a third season, if you will. I love it. You've got the bright reds, the oranges, the yellows, the golds of the aspens, the golds of the birch, and then you've got the oranges of the maples and the reds, comes alive.
And as you already mentioned, the blueberries, the shrubs are getting, a bunch of them get beautiful, and it's just it is a lovely time. Now, it's not quite as red and yellow as Minnesota, as the Midwest, but we still have it here in town, especially.
Yeah, and it's surprising. Yeah, if you just get out there and hike, you know, the valleys of especially as October comes along, the whole little cool yards of aspens that grow on different yes. mountainsides. But
the tamaracks come along eventually. Mm-hmm. It's so pretty.
Yes.
It is.
And now we're working into the bulb season. And those are, just to go along with the other, what we were talking about with deer, there are so much more fall bulbs that you can put in that are a lot more deer resistant when they pop up in the spring than the summer bulbs.
Yeah. What are some of those little bit more deer resistant bulbs? I'm curious.
Yeah.
That's an issue.
So when you're looking at putting in bulbs now in the fall, most deer resistant are going to be the daffodils and the alliums. So alliums are those big purple pom-poms that yes. pop up in people's gardens and landscapes in the summer.
Really
so
these showy.
Yes. And they usually don't pop until June, but they're really so gorgeous. And they're so interesting, you know, when they're in a field of other flowers. And so those are alliums. And then there is a new resistant, it's a deer resistant tulip. It's actually a hybrid. It does not get as tall as your Holland tulips, if you will. It's more short. It's about 5-6 inches off the ground. So you'd want to put them up front. But they are, and they're a little flatter. Oh. But that actually kind of shows they're really more like a tulip / wildflower. Hmm. But they're hardy. And for whatever reason, they are more deer resistant than the regular tulips. Which
yeah,
will
because tulips
get
are. Yeah, there. It's a bear to try and get a tulip to bloom with deer in the area. That's yeah. tough.
Yes.
Right.
So well, the daffodils, good. The alliums, the hyacinths. There's also the fritillarias, which are tall and very interesting. Crocosmias, things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's getting to be, in another month, maybe people would be starting to think about planting their bulbs.
Yeah, there's also the fall crocus, which are great. There's fall crocus and there's fall colchicums, and that they start their bloom cycle now. They started in August, and they'll come up every year in August, September, and bloom. And those are mostly in the lavenders, but they're really wonderful, and we're fortunate to be one of the areas where we can actually grow our own saffron.
Ah, I did not know that.
Yeah, one of the world's most expensive spices.
Wow.
And it is from the fall crocus species.
Okay.
Crocus sativus.
So, the little pollinating yep. part of that is saffron.
The little orange pieces that you yes. pick out, and you try to get them before they get fuzzy.
Wow.
Obviously, because then they will release. So you get them with a tweezers and pull them and,
sure.
and then store them.
And do you guys carry those?
We do. Yeah.
Oh, fun. I'll have to come out and look for some of those. That'd be a fun little experiment to see if I could get some saffron harvested at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool. There's more, of course, in the fall. We're starting to think about putting the gardens to bed and maintaining things and you know, of course, fall cleanup. And I've heard a couple of different ideas about what we're going to clean up in the fall. Some folks will say don't do too much on the ground floor because of pollinators and, you know, insects that need to live over, and others don't want to leave seeds and things. What is your recommendation?
I usually do a very, what I would call a tall, and I don't usually do any, a tall cut, if you will, and not usually until late October. Just to kind of get as the heads are looking on your flowers, the hydrangeas and things like that, cutting those blooms off that are all dried up, but
yeah.
waiting, or if the salvias and all the flowering perennials, you can do a real short, a light trim on the tops, and then wait until, you know, good into November or late October to do a medium. I usually leave at least 6 inches through the winter, because then I just feel, and then just do some mulch, leaf mulch. I like to use leaf mulch as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because then you don't have any
outside stuff coming in. Yes. And then it can protect those plants and help the soil not get quite so cold and all that. And save some bugs too. Hopefully the good ones. Yeah, good. That's very cool. Well, what else in terms of pruning? Are you a fruit tree pruner as soon as winter comes? Do you wait till spring? What's your...
I usually wait till spring in the March, April. If you have any, I know there's, you know, we've had, unfortunately, our share of a couple of big windstorms. And people have been coming to us with some large gashes, you know, branches, whole branches that have split off and things like that. And just trying to figure out what's the best way to save it. And there are ways to save your trees that you might, it might look a little lopsided for a while, but just making those clean cuts now, the sooner the better. If you have a tear on the branch.
Got to be taken care of for sure.
Because then they can start healing and then they're not supporting and it won't support that dead branch.
Yeah, makes sense. That makes sense. What else in the fall? What else are we thinking about as we come from late summer into fall? What else are folks needing to be focusing on?
Well, it's a good time of the year, especially as you're getting into the fall and then into the winter. If you're new to your landscape, if you've just moved into the area and you're kind of getting frustrated because of the August or the late August heat, then you might think about, okay, so where is a good place to put a wonderful, probably a deciduous tree, a maple or oaks, things like that, mountain ash. And there's lots of other choices, especially even if you just need a shorter one, skinnier ones.
Yeah.
But just something, if you have a real spot where you feel like you need some summer protection. And the nice thing about the deciduous trees is you'll still get that winter sun in your windows.
Yes.
And you'll appreciate that now then.
We will, especially in Sandpoint in winter.
January.
Yeah. In late fall, it really is a good time to get a tree planted. It gives them a chance to get a little start possibly and get settled in and be able to take advantage of all that nice spring rain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, get them in there.
And the September, you know, the nights will be cooler, so you give them deep watering, and you're going to be around to do that. Hopefully, we'll also get some natural rains. And yes, that'll give them time to get settled in. But like I said, it's a way to figure out your landscape, and like, we really need something here. And then, you know, and paying attention through the winter, if you want some more evergreens, like you just need some more evergreen color.
Yeah, what little zip your design might need. Yeah, my opinion has always been that one needs to observe their landscape for a bit of time before we make too many decisions about it, because the sun comes, you know, the sunlight changes and the way we're observing it changes, and it's a process. It's not something you can necessarily do a few weeks after you move into your place.
Yeah. And I encourage people to drive around their neighborhoods or drive, you know, as they're driving around, pay attention to what you like. And if you're like, oh, I really like that. And if you're walking or out walking, take a picture of it. And, you know, especially if you don't know what it is. And then you can say, where can I put that in my landscape? And you can, you know, investigate and read up about it and find the perfect spot for it in your landscape.
Right. It's a little research project, and it requires a good file folder and lots of photos and some thought, and then the yards come together. Well, Nancy, as we're coming closer to the end of this great talk that we're having, I was hoping you might just consider what a person, if they're either in a new garden or thinking about changing their garden, just what are some, like, what would be your two or three best bits of advice you might give that person?
Well, yeah, I think The first thing is just to really look at your roof lines. A lot of people, we move in here and, you know, we have some dry winters and we've had some, you know, 5 foot, 6 foot snow winters. And that can, it just seems to be cyclical, or every other year, you just, no, none of us know what's going to happen. And so before you do, like you said, major landscaping, especially if you're new to your house, your apartment, your whatever, take some pictures at each time of the year. And
take a
then
look at where all that snow is dumping down. Right. Oh, that's so true. I've had that experience. That is a good tip.
If you have a big metal roof, especially the metal roofs, and you put a gorgeous Japanese maple right in the wrong place, it's gonna take it out in a matter of hours or minutes. And two, where is your plowing, your snow blowing? Where's that landing? So those are places that perennials are used really well. Then you don't have to worry about them because they'll just sink in back into the ground and keep themselves protected until next year. And so it's just really good to kind of make a mental note, or even measuring where is your snow on your driveway going to be plowed to, and make sure that, you know, Jerry down the road isn't going to take out your prize rose bushes and things like that in the winter, because it's going to be dark in the morning and they're not going to see it. So
right.
Some things that I, you know, I've had too many stories of people just really upset.
Yes.
And then just, I think it's just trying to work within the nature, our natural environment.
Try not to put a plant where it really doesn't want to be.
Yeah.
They need to go where they're going to do well and thrive. Do you find people crowd their plants at first? Sometimes they look so little when they put them in and they end up with too many plants.
It's very common. And I think I've been guilty of that myself. It's when you're, especially when you're like, you want to have a bargain, you want to buy a bargain plant, and you're like, it's great, it'll be great here, but it's so small, so let's put five of them there. But if it's like a Russian sage, one little plant is going to get 3 feet wide, even though it looks like a little 4-inch plant right now.
I know it is so hard to think about the future of that plant and to wait for it also. Those are hard.
It is a lot like taking home a child.
Yes.
It's like we all like air and food and water. Taking care of your plants will reward yourself too.
Yes. Sorry, we had a little noise interruption there. But so many people want to do everything, and maybe some people can do everything, but I'm not sure that everyone can do everything. And I'm wondering if you have ideas about what are good do-it-yourself for projects and what might be better left to professionals.
Well, it obviously will depend upon your
skills,
your skill level, and then also your budget. There are a lot of things that you can do it yourself with a very low budget. Using all kinds of containers and things if you want to do your own small veggie garden. You can use containers for all kinds of things.
Containers are great. They really get you a long ways down the road.
And sure do. It's right. And you can change them up from year to year. You know, you can have veggies sometimes, and then especially here, what we talked about, the tomatoes and things like that, moving things around, it makes it easier to move it into the sun as the summer goes along. And I think with that, the one thing that I know I prefer to have somebody else do is for sure irrigation.
I think that's true. That's a kind of a more complicated project.
Yeah. And if you want it to make sure it's done right, because we do have our winters, and I've had, you know, too many stories told to me that, you know, if it's not done well, then you can, if you don't blow out your irrigation system in the fall, you might blow up your whole water pipes everywhere. Yeah,
that's so. That would be a mess, and that does have to have some preparation and someone with some knowledge. Also, hardscapes. Not everybody's mm-hmm. capable of of that kind of more architectural work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are so fortunate to have such gorgeous material, rock, in everything to work with. And there are some really talented concrete and natural rock landscapers out there. So, you know, it's one of those things that when it, and you, even just a few well-placed rocks, you can do a lot more than trying to build a whole rock wall. So it's just kind of developing an eye for that and just looking around and seeing and just being practical about, yeah, it's not, you're not going to enjoy your landscape if you're having to go through surgery afterwards.
No, you'll probably not feel great about it. And, you know, I think about this in landscape, and I'm sure you do because you're a designer, but it's important to think about where you like to be in your mm-hmm. on your land, in your landscape, and make sure that those places are inviting and not, you know, not filled up so that you can occupy them, but also to make them beautiful and surround them with a lot of beauty. And I think it's great when people put some time and thought into that. Where do they want to be in their yard, in their landscape?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing how I've seen friends who just have a little, you know, deck off their apartment, and they just, they can make it look into it, they can make it look like a
beautiful
vineyard garden. It's just, yeah, it's yeah. their haven. And it just takes a little planning and some creativity, and that's where they want to be. So that's where they put their effort. And it always makes you feel calmer when there's green and just,
yes,
a way, yep. somewhere you can just escape one corner of your,
right.
your apartment, your house, anything to, you know, integrate some green space there.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be extensive, but it's nice to have a little spot in the outdoors that you can enjoy and spend some time. Mm-hmm. And it's a good place to start, too. You know, starting small is not a bad idea.
Yes. Yeah. It just, figure out your focus of what you want to start with and then move on from there. It can get very overwhelming if, you know, people want, I want this all to be done. I want to do everything over. You know, I don't want to keep anything. It's like, okay, so let's start here and yes. move on from there.
Yep. A little, a step by step isn't a bad idea. Well, all right. I have run out of topics. What about you? Do you have anything else you'd like to talk about?
Well, it's been so fortunate to be, here in our community, working with so many different organizations, and also just our customers. We've had just such incredible customers, loyal customers for so many years, that, and we've met so many charming people. And it's just been a joy for us to really feel like this is, Sandpoint felt like home very quickly, even though we had moved 1,000 miles away from everyone that we knew. We didn't know a soul when we moved here. And so it is amazing. And I think that's a testament to this area and just, it's a beautiful area, and we're happy to be able to just try to keep, you know, blooming things and edible things going and growing for people.
Well, and it, you know, and I think there's a lot of gratitude for all that the help you've given the community. I hear so many kind words about the help that you've given folks, and you must enjoy being able to drive around the town and know, you know, who you've helped, and look at the beautiful growing gardens that had a lot to do with your input and advice.
It's fun. It's working with the school gardens has been an amazing program. Michelle Marker, she started the whole thing, and she's just a ball of energy, and she came to us and we're like, yeah, whatever we can do, you know. And so she just took the ball from there, and then we work with a little bit with some of the other folks in the Bonner County Food Bank and things like that, and they've all been very welcoming to.
Oh yeah,
just
we are also
so much to. Yeah, it's good to have people growing their own food and seeing that success is always fun. And so now, yeah, they're, I think almost all the middle schools and the grade schools of the public schools have their own gardens.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch the kids get their hands dirty and watch a plant grow. It's just it's a great program. And I feel so great that she was able to get that spark going and that you all have been able to help with that too.
Well, it's our pleasure. Yeah, it's so fun. I know. I mean, obviously I had my hands dirty a lot when I was young. And like I said, I think once you get into it, even if you move away from it, you know, as a teen and a 20-something, something gets in your blood and you
can come back.
You go back to it.
Yeah. People will come back to gardening. It's so great, gardening and plants. Well, all right. This has been just a great talk, Nancy. Here we are going to conclude. This has been the Tuesday morning show here on KRFY, Community Radio for the Idaho Panhandle. And I've been joined by Nancy Hastings, the owner and main worker, I think, at All Seasons Garden and Floral, Nursery and Floral. I'll get the name right, maybe. Let's see. All Seasons Garden and Floral. And you're out on the East Edge town there, and we just appreciate all the time and effort you put into helping folks get their gardens going. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Julie.